Richard Skipper celebrates. Every show is a celebration. Each show, Richard delivers the artists you love, showcasing what makes them unique. Never gossipy. The antidote to a sometimes hectic world. Now, here's your host, Richard Skipper.
Happy Tuesday, everyone, and welcome to a very special edition of Richard Skipper Celebrates. Before we begin with tonight's show, I just want to first of all say what a crazy day this country has experienced today. And I'm not talking politics. The weather across the country has been absolutely outrageous. Before we began tonight, I was watching the news, and Alabama was hit so hard by these tornadoes. So I want to take a moment to pause and think about all the families in Alabama and what they are going through. Just remember, everyone's going through something right now. And speaking of going through something, today marks 320 days since our theaters shut down. And when I say the theaters, I'm only talking about the physical buildings. The ghost lights of the theater and what burns in the hearts and souls of all of the artists everywhere are burning very brightly right now. And that brings us to our very special guest tonight. Now, before we begin to get to know Natasha, I want to say that back on December 10th, I was watching the NBC special, One Night Only, The Best of Broadway. Mm-hmm. And it truly was the best of Broadway. That is until Natasha hit the screen, because then it became the bestest of Broadway, because I sat up, I immediately went on Facebook and I said, who is this? I am in love. All my friends that are watching tonight will attest to this. Larry Sherman, who I know is a mutual friend, and Lori Kaplan, another mutual friend, they both said, you should have Natasha Williams on your show. And I said, oh my God, I would give anything to have her on the show. And then, because you and I just are physically meeting for the first time tonight, from a distance, of course, but I was excited to hear when you said hello to me earlier tonight. I said, where are you from? And there was a reason, because I hear this Southern accent there. Yes. And you say that you're from Fayetteville, North Carolina, and I am from Conway, South Carolina, which is not that far from where you are. Before we delve into everything tonight, I want to ask you, as I did say, it has been 320 days today. Mm-hmm. How have you been doing really in the midst of all this crazy world that we find ourselves in?
I'm still going up and down. I'm still going up and down. Certainly when it first happened, it was more downs, more down than up. Then I figured out a way to try to navigate where I am emotionally, financially, physically, all of the things that are changing in this new normal right now. Mm-hmm. Hope this temporary new normal. And I find myself finding more things to do. This summer was a crazy summer with inescapable events. You know, we had COVID and we had all of the racial injustices that were happening. And each one seemed to spiral me down, you know, in its own way. I got a couple of little jobs and then I would come up a little bit, and I got some more hope kept adding back in daily. And I discovered that in these dark places, I don't know, one of my friends, I think it was Stan Brown, sent me something about plants and seeds being buried and from that dark place, mm-hmm. life springing up. And Mother's Day, I was asked to speak at my cousin's church, and I used that subject of, I forgot what the title of it was, but it was about being in this dark space and how we can use it to die or we can use it to birth things.
Amen. Amen.
So that's what the focus was. And then from that point on, I began to just not necessarily be working all the time, because then it was about everybody saying, oh, you should be doing this, or you should be writing this, or you should be blah, blah, blah. Because some of that space needs to be restful time as well, mm-hmm. just to take care of yourself and be good. But I started at that point just finding out or figuring out where I can plant myself in order to grow something, in order to mm-hmm. be productive, in whatever way that was, even if it was just sleeping, you know, mm-hmm. a full 8 hours.
That's something I haven't done a lot of over the past year. But, you know, I think of this time as a pause. Mm-hmm. I think of it as a time for all of us. Hopefully, and I realize that, and I quote him all the time, David Friedman, who is a dear friend, says, we're all in this together, but we're not in the same boat. And everybody is experiencing what we're going through, through whatever prism that they're looking through. But I think of this time as a pause. I think of it as a time for us to pause and think about those things that we had in our lives, what we have in our lives, and what we want in our lives. Mm-hmm. And I think that we are all really getting to understand more than any other time in our lifetime how important our friends are, how important our family is. I mean, the fact that friends I haven't seen in a year. But I want to ask you, the theaters did shut down on March 12th. Mm-hmm. What did your calendar look like on March 11th?
March 11th, I was actually in London. I was in London, England, in the show Waitress. I left New York sometime in February. Well, I was in Waitress on Broadway. It closed January 6th. I went directly from that to Chicago on Broadway, like two streets over, the very next night. Mm-hmm. I couldn't even stay to the closing night party of Waitress all night because I was like, hey, I got to go relearn my lines for Chicago. So I started in Chicago and I was there a month. And then they said, let's go to London. I was like, yeah, let's go to London. I went to London, March 11th, thinking I would be there a month doing Waitress. And Broadway closed down, I think the 12th, you said, right? Mm-hmm. We were still open over there. And I was like, what's going on? You know, because I wasn't paying attention. And then my friends would call, you know, Broadway shut down. I was like, what? What's happening? Snowstorm? Blackout? What's happening? And everything over there was sort of normal. I mean, there was no hint for me that COVID had started and people were, and I was like, what is going on? So that was the first indication. But my calendar was full. My calendar was to stay in London until April, I think it's April, the first week of April, come back into Chicago and just continue living my life with my 8 shows a week, you know, in different shows. I'm going from Waitress to Chicago, Waitress to Chicago. And on the 16th, when the travel ban was instituted from the UK, my cast was like, I was like, y'all, I got to go home because I don't know if I can get home after this. And then because our show was still running, Rachel was still running on March 16th. And so I flew home because I had to. And then they closed the next day. Everything shut down. The day before that, March 15th, in the hotel that I was staying at, that's when the buffet was shut down. Prior to that, like I said, everything was just normal. And I was like, nothing's going on over here. Nobody has heard of this COVID thing or apparently.
So are you saying that you were oblivious to what was actually going on?
I'm not oblivious. Was there CNN in my hotel? I don't think there was CNN in my hotel. I wasn't in the hotel room that much anyway. And I was sightseeing and I was doing the fan line at the end of the show. And Sarah Bareilles was there and she was leaving the day before I left. She had stopped doing the fan line just because she wasn't quite feeling well. Mm-hmm. Later we found, I guess I can say that because she announced it afterwards, but I caught COVID in London.
Oh my God. I had no idea.
Like 8 or 9 cast members had it. And then we came back and I had it here for more than 14 days.
When you flew back to New York, did you actually have it as you were flying back?
Yeah, I must have had it then. I started coughing the day after I got back. Mm-hmm. And I went to get a test the next day. And 2 days later, I found out I was tested positive. My husband tested positive. My kids tested negative. But we were all together. And we were all over there in the same hotel room. So I think they had it too. It's just the test, it didn't show up for them that way.
Wow. So you played London before. I mean, you were in Gone with the Wind.
I have. That was my
And before we delve, I want to know about Gone with the Wind.
Lots of stories about Gone with the Wind.
No, what was your experience doing Gone? This is a new musical.
Yes.
I know that there was a musical version of Gone with the Wind that came out before us,
right? Yeah.
In the 60s with, believe it or not, Leslie Ann Warren and Harve Presnell. Harve Presnell was in The Unsinkable Molly Brown. But this was a completely reimagining.
Yeah. And Trevor Nunn directed it. It was fabulous. It was incredible. It's my first time in London. First of all, I was there for like 6 months and I had the best time. Now, we put a show together that was 4 hours and 25 minutes. And the tube over there stops at midnight. So if we, and our show started at 8. So the audience had to leave like midway because they couldn't get home. We weren't providing housing. It was an extraordinary production, so much so that Trevor just could not bring himself to cut the show. And we kept rehearsing and we kept saying, well, what, guys, we're still four hours. I mean, not only couldn't the audience stay, but little Bonnie, the character Bonnie, couldn't stay because kids could not perform after 11 p.m. So by the time we got to her scene at the end, she wasn't there. So we were imagining.
Well, thank God that everybody knows how it ends.
It's crazy. I mean, the first couple of nights before we knew she wasn't going to be there, like when we first ran through in front of an audience and realized, oh, my God, the child has had to leave the theater. An adult was back in the back on a microphone doing her Bonnie's lines. And everybody on stage was supposed to be looking at Bonnie, but Bonnie's body wasn't there. So we're all looking in different places. It was an out-of-body experience the entire time. I was just like, oh, my God, where are we? What is this, the Twilight Zone? About 3 nights, then we've worked out where Bonnie was, and we cut the show down to, like, 3 hours and something. But we had, like, 10 minutes on 2 show days in between. The music was beautiful. The music really was beautiful. Oh, my God, I can't even remember the lady's name who wrote the stuff. She had the same name as the original author, first name.
Margaret.
Yeah, well, I can't remember her last name. Can't remember her last name, but she was a beautiful lady. She lives in California. After the production, I went to LA and I stayed with her. And I stayed with her and just visit. We had a great visit out there. The music was beautiful. It was like a traditional theater. Not like legit, but certainly classical like. And then they would have a couple little, like the Slaves had not R&B song, but it was, you know, a little bit more soulful, I guess. Mm-hmm. A couple of tunes like that.
Now, was this show closer to the book or the movie?
It was closer to the movie and just almost all of the movie.
Plus the songs, you know. So.
Yeah, I guess it was probably closer to the book. I don't know. I just remember... Oh my God, we have to cut this, guys. We have to cut it. And we just...
But do you think there's ever a future for this production?
Well, that production was supposed to come back. That's the reason I went over there. Jill Pace was Scarlett. And we thought we were going to go and do this and then come bring it back to Broadway. But it just... I mean, we couldn't... It just couldn't. Mm-hmm. I mean, they couldn't... They really review it well because they had to leave. They had to leave. The audience had to leave.
That is amazing. That is absolutely
We had a fire in the theater one night. The stuff caught on fire.
So the burning of Atlanta, the audience is sitting there going,
smelling smoke,
realism.
Thinking it's not real. And we had to evacuate the theater. We were out in our costumes in the street in Covent Garden. But it was an extraordinary production in every way. I still am friends with a lot of the cast. And actually, we actually had a Gone with the Wind party when I went to do Waitress. That night, we did not knowing that some of us had COVID, but we did get together.
Well, I want to go back further.
Okay.
As I mentioned, you're from Fayetteville. Did you go to Myrtle Beach when you were a little girl?
Oh yes, every like 2 or 3 times a year.
The Pavilion.
Yep, and Atlantic Beach, and that's where the rides were. The Pavilion was all the rides, right? I go to Myrtle Beach now. Even I went. 2 years ago, I think was my last time in Myrtle Beach.
Wow.
I rented a big house with like a lot of my family members. We had about 19. I think the house slept 20. And we had about 19 people from different parts of the country in my family come and meet at Myrtle Beach. It was It was great.
Now, I want to know about the little five-year-old Natasha. Oh, growing up, I always go back to the five-year-old self because that's that pristine, pure little girl before peer pressure and school and all of those things get layered on you. What were you like as a five-year-old child?
I think I was kind of nosy. actually, at 5 years old, I lived in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. My sister was born, and the teenagers were always out in our street double dutching. And I couldn't wait to grow up to double dutch. That was one thing.
Now, were you born in Pennsylvania or were you
born? I was actually born in Rochester, New York.
Oh, wow.
I was only there for like 3 months. The snow came and my family was like, no, we're out of there because we're from North Carolina. I don't know what this snow stuff is. So we moved. My dad used to work for IBM. So we were up in Rochester, New York. Then we moved to Philly and stayed there for 5 years. My sister was born in Philly. And then my grandmother got sick and my mother wanted to go home. And so 5 and a half, 6 years old, we moved to Fayetteville, North Carolina. That was home, my mother's home. And it certainly is my home as well.
Now, do you have brothers and sisters?
I do. I have a sister, younger sister and a younger brother. My brother was born in Fayetteville. He's the baby.
Okay.
And he's there now. And my sister, he was in Raleigh. He just moved back to Fayetteville. And my sister lives in Hampton, Virginia.
Now,
5-year-old me was a singer too. I wanted to be on television. I didn't know about theater. I wanted to entertain people on TV.
Well, I was going to ask, what was your first exposure to entertainment? And now you've just answered that question through television. What were the shows that you were resonating the most with you as a little girl?
The Sonny and Cher show. And Jackson 5 had a show. Jackson 5, I don't know, whatever their show was. And Janet would come out every now and then, and they would have her just being cute on the TV. That I used to watch Angela Dickinson's show all the time. Police Woman, I think it was called Freeze. She would do Freeze. You know, but I would be watching television with my mother. And just wanting to go into people's houses in that medium and make them feel like it was making me feel. So I wanted to entertain, but I thought it was the only way was.
Now, did you have arts and education? Were you exposed to the arts in school?
As a child, no. I just at church. I was in the plays and the cantatas or whatever we had at church. And that's how I got into it. And then when I turned 13, I had an assistant principal who encouraged me to try out for the, at that time it's called the Fayetteville Little Theater. And I went and did a production of Razzle Dazzle, which led to Little Shop of Horrors and all the other productions that I did before moving to New York. So
What was it that she encouraged you to go and audition? I mean, were you performing in school beyond that? Or she saw something
in school. I was performing in school. I was singing at all of our football games. I was singing the national anthem. And I was in the plays and production. There's actually a man. His name was Reginald Innett. And he told me about the Fayetteville Little Theater. And they were having this fashion extravaganza singing thing. And they had like a Motown section and a Broadway section. And he's like, you would be great if you just go and audition for that. And I did. And Bo Thorpe, who was our director at the time, put me in a show, and I did a show probably every year after that from 13 on till moving.
And were your parents encouraging for you to pursue?
Oh, very much so. They were just like, yeah, whatever you want to do. And I was always like in something, never really home, never learned how to cook and stuff like that because I was always involved in some kind of production. But they were super encouraging and never once discouraged me. Certainly my mother would say occasionally, hey, well, what are you going to fall back on? Or what are you going to do? When I learned that you could do this for a living, I went to college and majored in math. And
then you go to college?
I went to North Carolina A&T State University. Okay. I was a math major. And then I discovered the theater there. And it was like, Mom, you can do this for real. Like, this is a thing. People do this. And I was spending so much time in the theater because I was in the plays. I was trying out. My math grades started to slip. And I was like, hey, let me just double major this thing. And so that's what I ended up doing. Speech communications and theater arts and math education. So it was a long 4.5 years.
Mind was made up while you long before you came to New York that this was what you were going to do with yourself.
Definitely.
And how did the move to New York happen?
I had a fish fry in Fayetteville, North Carolina. It was a year I was a teacher. I taught school. I lost my uncle, Ernest T. McLone, in 95. Must have been 94, 95. Mm-hmm. And it was right after grad school. I went home and taught school at Westover High School for a year and was just still had that burning desire to sort of perform and share. So I was like, okay, that summer we had a big fish fry and I was a swimming teacher. I was doing everything, just trying to raise money. Cause as a teacher, you didn't make any money. And I had spent all my money on my kids, on my students anyway.
So you had this fish fry to raise money to come to New York?
Yeah. To have money to live. I was going to move in with my aunt and I did. I lived with my Uncle Dora and my Aunt Bessie and they lived in Portchester, New York, like 30 minutes out of the city. And I would take the Metro North train. My dad bought me a monthly train pass and I could just ride. So I had money just for my pocket change, if you will. And
so your mom, when you said, I'm going to go to New York, I'm going to live with my aunt and uncle, your parents were once again supportive of this decision.
They were like, where are you going to live? I said, I'm going to live.
She's frozen. This is a snowstorm going on, everyone. She'll be back. If you can hear me, Natasha, it might be best to leave the room and come back in because sometimes that fixes the issue. I'll keep talking until hopefully
there
you are. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I was just saying that my parents were like, okay, look, but what's the plan? You want to move to New York? Do you have somewhere to stay? I was like, yes, I'm gonna stay with Aunt Bessie. What do you have to do? I said, well, I just have to get to the city and audition. My dad said, okay, I'll buy you the train pass. And I said, well, Aunt Bessie will feed me. So that's all I need. I got my food. I got my housing. And you got me to the city. I'm going to sing. I'm going to get to the city. I'm going to sing and I'm going to act. So it's all taken care of. So they were like, okay.
So you come to New York and you have to learn the ropes on how to get seen, auditions and all that. Yes. Did you have any clue at all as to what you needed to do? Take us back to that first day that you were in New York.
I'm trying to figure out who told me. I went to New York and I was just walking around. I used to come every summer and my cousins would take me down and I'd be like, hi, you know, speaking to people. And they'd be like, stop that. Stop. We don't do that here. We don't speak to people. Just look straight ahead. People think you're crazy. People think you blah, 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 all this stuff, right?
Full disclosure, everyone. If you're from North or South Carolina, we do that here in New York.
Yes. So
yes,
yeah, that's the notice. So my cousin would take me down, like I said, every summer, and we would figure out, and I was like, well, what are these people asking? We'd go see a couple of plays, and then I would stand in those lines with fan lines and just meet people. And I went to see, Ragtime was the first show that I saw after moving to New York.
Wow.
And I was like, oh my goodness, this is amazing. And this is exactly what I want to do. And, I don't know who. I think I talked to a couple of people after the show that were actors in that line waiting to meet people. And I was like, well, what are you doing? I just moved here, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, well, you get this backstage newspaper and it tells you these auditions. I was like, what? Really? Oh, my goodness. It's going to tell me. I don't have to really know anything because I don't know how to have an agent. I don't know, blah, blah, blah. And so that's what I did. I started off just getting that backstage every I thought it was Wednesday. Now it's Thursday.
It was Thursday.
And I get that newspaper every day and every week and go through it and see the stuff that I was right for. I'd circle that in red and the stuff that I could possibly make work. I circled that in yellow. And then I went to those auditions and I auditioned as much as I could.
Mm-hmm. Did you have a survival job? Did you wait tables or?
No, because I had everything. Everything was taken care of. I eventually, when I moved out from my aunt, I got a job and I worked at the Christian Times in Brooklyn. It was the New York Christian Times. It was a newspaper. And it was so flexible. I was like a secretary or something. I wasn't a sale. I didn't do much, but I was in charge of the events. So I would like book myself to sing or book my friends to come and sing and perform and with them and be able to go to auditions. And they were so wonderful to me there. And I started auditioning and then when I booked something, I could go do it and come back.
And how long were you in New York before you got your first acting job?
For money?
Any acting job.
You know what? I was here 2 days. I booked my first job in 2 days, but it didn't pay anything. It was all.
Natasha, I've done lots of those.
Right. It was a Godspell. I booked the Godspell in Harlem at the Victoria Theater. It was a movie theater, but they were changing it into a theater, and it actually caught on fire.
Wow.
So I never got to perform Godspell.
Did it catch on fire while you were in rehearsal? This is two theaters that you've told us about.
Right.
I think, Natasha, you're too hot for the theater.
Right. I was beginning to think that. It caught on fire in our previews, I think, because my parents came up, and that weekend they couldn't see the show because we had no theater. And then it never made it back because we weren't funded or anything. Right. It was just Richard Haas was our writer, well, not writer, our director and music director. His wife is a music director. And so.
And how long was it before you, I mean, did the jobs start coming in? I mean, obviously you auditioned, you get your first show. That, even though you weren't getting paid,
right,
you were still an actress in New York.
I was. And I was okay because my Aunt Bessie was feeding me. I do remember a day that I had.
Is like, Aunt Bessie still around?
She passed actually 3 years ago.
Well, God bless you, Aunt Bessie. Let's say,
God bless you. So I think I was like maybe 6 months in. I booked I could stop on a dime and get 10 cents change, and it was at the Cleveland Playhouse. That was the first thing I booked, and that got me my Equity card.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did a lot of regional stuff, and then I started doing tours. I did about 8 national tours, and I was a big fan of Lilias White and
Carpathia Jenkins. Lilias, you know how much I love you.
Carpathia Jenkins, Lilias White, Adrienne Lennox. I mean, I was just following them all around. I met Carpathia at something. I don't remember how we met actually. And she told, and I kept saying this was after the tours. I had been going on maybe about 6 tours in. And she told, I said, I want to be on Broadway. I can't book a Broadway show, but I can, you know, book the Broadway tours that leave. And she was like, well, stay home, stop touring. And I was like, I had no concept of.
Sometimes the best advice is the simplest advice.
What do you mean? I auditioned and I booked this show and I got this job and I have to pay my bills and I have to da 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 and all those kinds of things. And she was like, if you just stay, it might be hard. You might not book everything right away, but you can't book it if you keep going away.
Now, even though you're doing tours, you're going on the road and everything, you were obviously auditioning for Broadway shows as well, I'm assuming. Were you getting callbacks? You were being seen by the right people.
I felt like the auditions, maybe I wasn't auditioning for Broadway shows, but I felt like I was always auditioning and then next. Like I was next. So then when the tour started, then they called me for the tour. I felt like that's what was happening. I was always covering Sharon Wilkins or covering Carpathia or Keisha Lewis. You know, I felt like I was like always next. So the drowsy, Keisha got the drowsy chaperone and then I got the tour. You know what I mean? Or I would just book it next. And even my Broadway debut, I was next. I was the second Sophia. You know, I was replaced Sophia. So before I started booking, that was my debut. But that was 10 years after I got here. When I booked my first Broadway show.
Perseverance.
Yeah.
Thank you. But I want to go back to this period. Obviously, you've got this phenomenal voice. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God, do I love your voice.
Thank you.
But when you, who were you studying with? I mean, you were obviously honing, and when the time came, let's face it, when Broadway knocks at your door, you have to be ready.
And you got to be home. Well, not now. Not now. You can just sit in a table. Right. But I was, like I said, I was studying everybody and not really studying with anybody. I didn't do that. I didn't even study when I was coming up. I certainly had chorus in school and I had phenomenal chorus music teachers, Susan Williams and Betty Neal Parsons. Those were my teachers in junior high and high school, and they really taught you how to read music. They really were the were artists, and not just like a course teacher. You know what I mean? So it was really a phenomenal program. Plus, I was working at the Fayetteville Little Theater, and Sharon McNair was there, who taught chorus at E.E. Smith High School. And so I had a lot of people in my environment that were just teaching me the craft of music. And then when I got to New York, I was studying the shows. I went to shows that I could be in, and I studied those particular artists. But I didn't study with anyone, probably like I should have. I just made myself a student every day, everywhere I went. I tried to pick up something everywhere I went, you know, learn from somebody. Yeah.
So your first Broadway show as a replacement, was that Waitress?
No, that was The Color Purple, the original Color Purple, not the revival. And I played Sophia. I replaced Felicia P. Fields in The Color Purple. Oprah Winfrey's The Color Purple. So it was great.
So where were you when you found out that finally your dream is coming true? You're going to be, you're opening on Broadway. I mean, 10 years you've worked and let's say 10 plus years because we want to count all the theater that you did prior to New York. You get this Broadway show. Where were you when you found out that you were going to be doing it?
I was actually in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and I was doing the tour of All Shook Up. I was playing Sylvia in All Shook Up, and that's a crazy story. It was our opening week in Wisconsin and for the tour. Oh, our understudies hadn't been rehearsed, none of that. And I auditioned for the show before I left town, and the callback was this particular week. I remember it very vividly. It was September 15th. And I didn't tell my producers that I was going to go back to the callback. And I couldn't get a direct flight from Milwaukee. So I drove to Chicago and I flew out that morning, got to New York, did the audition. My audition time was like 10 or 11 in the morning. I got back to the plane to come back because I had a show that night and I had rehearsal that day, but I was going to miss the rehearsal and just get back to the show. And as I said, did I mention I didn't tell them that I left?
Anyway, you did mention that.
Raining in New York. LaGuardia, I got onto the plane. I was like, oh, this is great. It's going to work. It's going to work. And we sat on the tarmac for like 3 hours. And I said, okay, I've got to call them and tell them that I am not there. But I still was hopeful. I was like, okay, if we take off, I can make it. So I called my stage manager and I told him that I was at the airport. I didn't tell him that I was at the airport in New York. I told him that I could not come to the rehearsal because I was at the airport. He was like upset, but you know, just let it go. We still didn't take off.
Did he yell at you? Was he just
not yet? He still was just like, Natasha, what are you talking about? We have this blah blah blah. We have a show tonight, blah blah. I was like, yeah. I'm still not saying that I can't make it because I didn't know. About maybe an hour later, I realized, you know, this isn't right. I called my understudy. I told her that I was going. She was the only person that knew Aurelia Williams. She was the only person who knew I was going to New York, and unless she told somebody. And so then I told her, I said, you know what? I'm stuck. I'm not going to make it. I manned up. I called him, and I think it was about 2 o'clock at this time. And I said, I'm sorry. I might not make the show. I'm not quite sure. And they were like, nobody's been rehearsed. We got to call a special rehearsal, blah, 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 blah. I was like, I understand. Where are you? I said, I just had something I had to do. I didn't lie about it. I just didn't tell them where I was. And so I got back to Milwaukee at like 7:50 or something like that. And they were like, you're not going on. I said, I understand. I'm totally fine. Aurelia went on. She was great. She knew ahead of time. You know what I mean? But they just hadn't seen her do it. And then that was a Friday. Monday morning, I got a call from my agent. And but my producer was furious with me. Oh, he's so wonderful to me now. Richard Martini. I'm saying all these names because they're just beautiful people.
No, we need to acknowledge these people.
I'm glad we do. Martini Entertainment. And it was a great casting company. They were so wonderful to me. But anyway, so Richard was like, hey, I'm going to have to fine you. And I was like, okay, how much is the fine? Oh, it could be $2,000 to $10,000, anywhere from there. I'm like, why? Oh, we had to call this special rehearsal. It's a union house. We had to blah, blah, blah. We had to get these people in. We had to give our put in. We had to blah, blah, blah. We had to do all this stuff. And I was like, okay. Well, where were you? What happened? And I just kept saying, Richard, it was something I had to do. It's something I had to do. So he was like, okay, fine. They let me go. So that was Friday night. I didn't go on. Aurelia did a great job. Monday morning, I get a call from my agent and she's like, are you sitting down? I said, no, well, you need to sit down. I thought she was telling me to sit down because she's going to tell me the amount of my fine. I'm like, okay, lay it on me. Hit me with it. How much is it? And she said, you have booked Sophia in The Color Purple. Now, the interesting thing was I went to audition for the gospel singer who mm-hmm. opens the show. I didn't audition for Sophia. I was auditioning for the gospel singer. Mm-hmm. And she told me you booked Sophia. The other interesting thing is my contract with All Shook Up would not let me out unless I booked a principal role in a Broadway show that started after January 4th. I had to do the tour for like 3 months or whatever, from September to January they didn't want anybody to leave before January. So the only way I could get out is if it was a principal role on Broadway and it started after January 4th. Well, my principal role on Broadway started January 6th. So I was able to, I still get verklempt thinking about my Broadway debut because it was so much stress to get to it, but it was so perfect. It was so ordained. Aurelia was brilliant as Sylvia in the show, and it just all came together in a special way. I was also, my husband and I were like separating prior to this show, and when I auditioned for All Shook Up, I was like, hey, I got this opportunity. I feel like I'm gonna get this show, and if we're gonna work on this marriage, I won't go. And he actually said, go to the audition. And so I was like, okay, well, I'm getting a divorce. It's fine. I'm going to book this show and I'm going to be on the road. And the day before I left for the Shook Up tour, he was like, no, it was July 4th, Independence Day. The mover, I'm telling my whole life story on this thing.
No, that's what
the movers came. The movers came to my house July 4th to take my stuff. Like my dad was like, okay, well, y'all are separate. I said, Dad, we're separating this stuff, but I'm going to leave it in the house. He said, I can leave. He's like, no, take your stuff out of the house. I don't know, what's going to happen, blah, blah, blah. So I got a mover to take my stuff July 4th. And he stopped me. He was like, hey, I'm going to work on this. I'm so sorry. I didn't mean this. I don't know. I was just blah, blah, blah. And I was like, dude, I booked the show. I'm leaving for a year. I'm out of here. What is wrong with you? Why you want to work on this now? So then we had this big thing. I ended up not separating the stuff. I paid the movers, but we left the stuff. I said, I still got to do this tour. So anyway, I did the tour, but a month later, I find out that I'm going to be coming home and that I'm going to be able to do my Broadway show. I'm going to work on my marriage. I'm going to, it was truly an ordained appointment, a divine appointment.
Plus, absolutely. Amen. I want to go back to when your agent called you and said, Sophia.
Yes.
Which obviously you weren't auditioning for that role, as you mentioned. Mm-hmm. Was that even on your radar that was a possibility?
Oh, I certainly wanted to be Sophia. But because I hadn't booked a show yet, I hadn't booked a Broadway show, I always felt like I was next. You know what I mean? Not the girl. So it wasn't on my radar, except for at the audition, Gary Griffin, who was the director, came out of my audition after me and he hugged me and he said, that was wonderful. And I was like, oh, great. Is this what they do? But the last time somebody did that kind of thing to me, I'd never heard from them. Like I'd like did a great audition or whatever. And they're like, oh, put her in this pile, put her at the top of this pile. And then you never hear from them. So I always got leery of people telling you how wonderful you did, at the audition. So, but he did, he came out, he hugged me and I thought, oh, that was great. I hope this is really great. And I was staying with a friend of mine in Milwaukee named Lawrence. And he and I just celebrated, cried, did everything together because it was just a testament of God's faithfulness that I even booked this thing And
how long did it take you before you broke the news to your cast and the producer? Please tell me you never were fined.
I was fine, but it was like $2,000. I was less than $2,000, maybe. Okay. $2,000. It was the minimum of what it could be. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the $10,000 because that was the
thank God. Thank God.
I did get fined, but there was no residual. They didn't treat me funny or crazy afterwards, and it was just.
But it paid off.
Yeah, I think 2 weeks after that, I sort of had to tell them based on the time that I had to give them, because mm-hmm. I think I had to give them like 2 months or something. Notice or something like that.
I mean, in this business, I mean, that's one of those decisions that you weigh heavily on every artist that I know. Yeah. You're doing a show, you get a role. Do you not audition or do you audition? Mm-hmm. Obviously, you made the decision to audition. And I love the fact that on your own dime, you flew to New York, you were that confident, you get it. So tell me about your opening night on Broadway, the first time that you walked out on stage as Sophia.
Wow. Wow, Richard, why are you doing this to me?
I'm the Barbara Walters of the virtual streaming.
Wow. It was pretty incredible. I had never been in a limousine, and so I rented a limousine like for 12 people. I had like 20 people come up from my hometown, and I rented a 12 passenger limousine.
Were your mom and dad there?
Mom and dad were there. I rented out B. Smith's restaurant for an opening, like, because I wasn't getting an open night party because the show was already open. And so I was like, no, we gotta have, this is my opening night, we're gonna have it. So I rented out B. Smith's, and I went there. I had an opening night party and invited people. Just like I rented a mink coat. it was crazy. I was just like,
I love it.
This is it. So I did that, and my family, Aunt Bessie included, and my mom and dad piled into this limo, and we climbed over each other because it was like, you know, you had to go around in the car, We rented a car. We went down. They drove me down. They had dinner. I went to the show. Thank you. We drove to my opening night party, and it was just glorious. It was like the world. I was just floating the whole night. I can see my mother right now descending from B. Smith. Have you ever been? It's like a
One of my favorite restaurants.
She was upstairs and she came down and she was making an announcement, and It was all of our opening nights, because she had just pushed me and been my biggest cheerleader my entire life. And
how long did you stay with the show?
I was there a year. I did my contract for a year, and Chaka Khan came in. You know, sales were dipping right then. That was the third year of Color Purple, mm-hmm. and so Chaka Khan, they got Chaka Khan and BB Winans to come in as Sophia and Harpo, and. And right after that is when I went to London, actually.
With Gone with the Wind.
With Gone with the Wind, yeah.
Okay. And, no, but what is your, I'm for Clint myself, I can't even think right now. Mm-hmm. But what is your discipline when you're doing a show? You have to be disciplined to do 8 shows a week.
Sure.
What is your routine when you're doing a long-running show?
Well, I'm in class, but I'm in an acting for the camera class, for the most part. Mm-hmm. I do coachings, like, just for auditions now. Mm-hmm. When I'm in a long running show, I leave my house probably about 5 or 5:30, go and park I generally park in a lot. I walk around in Times Square, as crazy as it is most of the time, and just sort of taking in all the little billboards and stuff and imagining where I want my picture to be whenever I get there. And I get to the theater, I get something to eat, get to the theater, walk the stage and just look out at all the seats. I say a prayer asking them to receive what I'm giving, and asking myself to be able to feel the energy from them.
Mm-hmm.
I warm up and I go and sit in my dressing room and put on my face, and that's basically it. That's amazing.
Obviously, you're starring in a Broadway show, but as far as the business is concerned, how did your life change at that moment? Agents, managers, everything that comes with that.
I worked very hard to practice what I'm doing before I had what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. so that my lifestyle didn't really change, because I was constantly preparing myself to be this person.
You were already living it up here and here.
Yeah. I mean, that was part of what the limo was and the mink and the, you know, I'm going to have this party regardless. And, but just preparing myself, this is what I've been working for, and this is what I wanted to achieve, and this is, I want to feel every bit of it, you know. I actually did the show with Fantasia she came in about 2 months after I did, and so she actually got an opening night party from the company. So I had like two opening night parties. I had mine, and then I went to hers, and Color Purple was just such an extraordinary experience.
But this was her first Broadway show.
It was her first Broadway show. And because she was a star, they gave her one too. I mean, she brought people in, so they made money to, you know, to have.
Well, tomorrow night, I'm interviewing Michael Orland.
Really?
Do you know Michael?
Yes, I do. Tell him hello.
And of course, you know, she came from American Idol. And,
right. And I was going to say, I just talked to Catherine McPhee like 2 days ago. Tell him I said hello.
How is she doing?
She's doing great. She's 9 months
pregnant. I know. You know, it's funny. Last night I was watching a special on Lucille Ball. I'm not going to give Catherine's age away. She may be watching. Uh-huh. But I think she's the same age that Lucille Ball was when she had Lucy Arnaz.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, Catherine, if you're watching, we send you very healthy vibes.
Yes.
So while you're doing the show, you were with The Color Purple for 1 year. Mm-hmm. During that time, did your energy lag, or was it always the excitement of walking out on opening night for you?
It was pretty much every night was new. And I knew that there were people there that had never seen it. There were some there that had seen it, but there were a lot of people there. It was their first time there. And so my training is that. We're doing that show for those people who've never seen it. And they're giving me something different. So I'm always giving a new kind of energy as well. Same intentions, but, you know, new energy.
What doors opened as a result of The Color Purple?
Most of the doors from The Color Purple were the sustaining relationships. Mm-hmm. That have gotten me through those times when I wasn't working or when I didn't feel good about the work I was doing. Color Purple for me was the basic lifelines, the people, the relationships in that show. I still am friends with most of them today, and they still feed my spirit. It taught me that I could be a leading lady. It taught me that I had something that somebody wanted to watch. So I should keep moving until I find that audience. That's what door opened for me, the door of myself and the confidence in what it is that I do and what I have to present. And that I was no longer next, that it was time for me to just be.
I love that.
So that's what the debut and that time, that year long of doing it every day and being received and accepted every day taught me. But discipline was always a very big part of all of it, you know, every day. It's just being grateful for the space that I was allowed to occupy. Yeah.
Now, I want to talk about two recent events. Mm-hmm. The first I began this program with, that was the recent Broadway special that you did on NBC. Mm-hmm. How did that come about? They called you and asked you, did they give you the option of what they wanted you to sing, or did they tell you what? And I think that you said to me when we did speak some time ago that you didn't even know if it was going to make it to airtime or not.
Yeah. Well, I kind of live in that place. It's like, oh, I think it's happening, because that night I forgot what happened. The show just looked, when the Chicago like performed early on, the group, and I thought, oh, are they going to use my song? I really felt like that up until they like, oh no, I think I saw Jersey Boys or somebody else perform twice, and I was like, oh no, it's going to come later, because they're doing two numbers. They're doing, each show is doing two numbers. So now I'm okay. But yeah, I was nervous for a minute that I didn't make the cut. I can't eat this. My son wants me to try this popcorn. Okay. Anyway.
Send some my way.
Well, I was a little nervous. I was like, oh my goodness, what's happening? And is it going to make it? And the time, I think something happened with the time or the I have no idea, but I was nervous about, is it really going to happen? But I'm always that way too. I'm like, they're going to cut me.
But they didn't. And I want to tell you, I mean, you knocked, I think televisions blew up all over the country because you were so phenomenal. Did your phone just go crazy that night?
It did. My phone went crazy. Lots of messages.
Was this the first time, Natasha, that you were getting national exposure on this level?
I think so. I felt like that. I mean, I've been on a couple of TV shows and stuff like that, but not focused attention. It's calling my name, Natasha Yvette Williams.
Center stage, it's you.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was definitely. I'm hearing all of this. Sorry, in the background.
It's okay.
I'm sorry. Sorry, that's my husband chatting. Okay. I think it was. It must have been. Yeah.
And something else. And there, I want to make sure that I get this in. I'm watching the clock. Mm-hmm. You just performed for the inauguration. What was that experience like for you?
Well, that now is my biggest audience to date, I'm sure. The weight of this last year has been so just heavy. So performing for the inauguration and all that it represented, especially after the events of January 6th,
yes,
made it just an extraordinary point of inclusion, point of just, this is my country, this is for me, and this is for all of us. Just please jump in and be a part of it. It was incredible. Now, mind you, this is the wall, you know, for the house scene that you saw. Mm-hmm. I was home. But the piecing together of even that video just sort of
was amazing.
Symbolized for me what we're doing now. We're piecing ourselves back together. We're trying to recover from this pandemic, two pandemics, the racial injustice pandemic and the health pandemic.
Natasha, were you an activist before the events of the past year?
No. I feel like I'm one now. I am one now.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I wasn't.
I think that so many of us, we have to be.
Yeah. I was very much a person who was a peacemaker for every event, everything. Not wanting to make waves, not wanting to disturb people, wanting people to be comfortable. Mm-hmm. Very much that was who I was. Concerned about how things look, concerned about how I was perceived. Until my son says to me, why are all the Black people dying? Why? And then one day he was like, I can't go outside. I kept trying to get him to just ride the
bike. How old is your son, do you mind my asking?
He's nine. He said, I can't go outside, Mommy. I can't go outside because I'm Black. And I thought, I can't give you this. I can't just try to make you make everybody else comfortable. So then I became an activist and got the invitation from Audra McDonald and LaChance to put together Black Theater United, that group. And so now I am an activist.
And you were doing something tomorrow, because I want to thank you for the little promo you did before tonight. But tell everybody what you're doing tomorrow so that it just doesn't end tonight, folks. This is tomorrow. The opening act.
Tomorrow I'm taking over the IG Live for Black Theater United, which is an organization that was formed right after George Floyd's murder, to help fight racial injustice in the theater and in the world. We are doing macro and micro events that sort of target injustice in every level. So that's what I'm doing now. And now I am an activist, and I'm trying to just give my son and my daughter and your sons and daughter a better place than where we sit right now.
I want to ask you a question, because mm-hmm. we are at this very
that's at 6 o'clock tomorrow. 6 o'clock tomorrow, IG Black Theater United, British spelling R-E instead of.
And will you post the information on my page?
I will as much as I can. You know, I'm terrible at this technical stuff. Yes, I do send it out, but I'm awful. Yes, I will.
Friend me because I couldn't tag you on anything.
Okay, you don't know how to do anything.
I want to ask you before we wrap everything up, because we are at this pivotal moment, and I want to end on an up note, but I want the honesty. Mm-hmm. Have you experienced or discrimination in the theater?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. In lots of ways, some, I think a lot of them have been unintentional, or just people are really kind of clueless. You know, they say things that are hurtful and harmful and are just not aware of the impact it is. I, a lot of times, am the only Black person in the room, in the rooms that I go in. And so that carries with it sometimes the weight of the other people's expectations, how they perceive me as a Black woman. And I have to fight through that sometimes. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I've been asked to wail and do certain things that Black people do. Been asked to say this more Black or more ethnic. Been discriminated against in a lot of different ways and areas, not unique to me, I'm sure, because people just have this systematic kind of thing ingrained that they don't even realize they're doing it. I think now is a time when we're sort of calling people on the carpet and certainly saying this is not acceptable and it's not cool anymore to not talk about it. So that I'm grateful for. That I'm grateful
for. I'm grateful that we've reached a point where we can speak out. Mm-hmm. Everybody, if you see it, speak out. Natasha, I am in love with you.
Oh,
I hope your husband hears me say this.
He's putting the kids to bed.
You know, in the moment that I, and thank you, Larry Sherman and Lori Kaplan, both of you, for putting your hand in this and making this happen tonight. I hope that you'll come back.
Hey guys.
Anytime you have anything to promote, you always have a platform right here.
Oh, thank you so much.
And I want to thank everybody for watching the show tonight. If you enjoyed the show, and I hope you did, and if you haven't done so already, please go to my website, richardskipper.com. Sign my guest book with your thoughts about the show. That helps to boost me in other markets. As I mentioned earlier, tomorrow night, I will be sitting down with Michael Orland. He is the musical director for American Idol. You know, America's Got Talent. So he's worked with everybody in the business. He's just phenomenal. And I'm going to be celebrating him tomorrow night. So I'm looking forward to that. I also end every show by telling everyone to go out and do something nice for somebody else without expecting anything in return. Go to your Facebook friends list. Go to your list of friends and go to the 8th friend that pops up and reach out with a phone call. Let that person know what they mean to you. Not a text, not an email, not a private message, but a phone call. As I said earlier, we're all in this together, but we're not in the same boat. And you don't know what anyone else is going through at any given time. So please reach out. And Natasha, I want to give you the final word. Mm. Anything that you want to expound upon that we talked about tonight? Anything that we didn't talk about that you wish we had? Or just any message that you want to put out to everyone who's watching now? This is your platform. And again, thank you, thank you, thank you for being you.
Thank you for having me. I don't really have it. You know, you always want to, or I always want to say something profound, but I just want everybody to love one another, and keep hope in the space right beside it. Because we can get better by working to heal each other. And that means doing something for somebody else. So I love that idea of going down and scrolling and just randomly finding someone to be good to. But in the midst of your being good, always hope that we turn out tomorrow in a better place and work for that.
So that's amen. Thank you. Good night.
Mwah, good night. And thank you.
Thank you.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.